We'd like to welcome you to the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align. I'm your host, Amber, and I'm here with co-host Austin, and we'd like to know, do you have a passion to make a greater global impact? Are you ready to embrace leading with heart and love? If so, join us on this journey to become heart leaders who change the world. Each episode brings heart-centered connection, building stronger relationships, communities, and businesses. Let's take a deeper dive into what it means to be heart leaders. The Heart Leader Podcast starts now. Hi, and welcome to the Heart Leader Podcast. Today, we are blessed to have Steve Sadica of Stephen Douglas. Steve Sadica is the founder of Stephen Douglas, and he founded that amazing boutique executive placement organization in 1984 at the young age of 25 years old, which has allowed him to have such a depth of knowledge, especially in the heart leader area, as he's grown this amazing organization throughout his life. This is an amazing placement organization. It's an executive search firm, and they are committed to their staff in encouraging and supporting a culture of inclusivity and aligning executives and interim services with organizations that fit. He is also giving back to the community by sitting on boards such as the Jason Taylor Foundation. And he'll go more into what he does and giving back to the community as we talk through our discussion today. But he doesn't only do that. He's also set up a charitable foundation that his daughter runs for him so that he can continue to keep it in the family and give back to the community through family. So without any further ado, we're going to get into the discussion with Steve Sadica so we can learn some of his secrets and tools to being such a profound heart leader, especially in the area of using gratitude to give back to the community. So thank you, first off, Steve, and talking about gratitude and appreciation for being here and gifting us your time. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Amber. Thanks for that enthusiastic welcome. I really appreciate it.
Well, I am just one of your biggest fans, and you know that. And there are so many reasons that I am your biggest fan. But one of the first things I would like to dive into so that folks can get to know you a little bit and understand why I love you so much is to talk about your contributions in the area of business, the culture that you've created within your business. So if you can tell us a little bit about Stephen Douglas and what you do, because I know that I just barely scratched the surface when I was introducing you.
No, my pleasure. You know, I'd be glad to tell you a little about Stephen Douglas and really what had me start Stephen Douglas years ago. You know, what was important to me. So, Stephen Douglas is an executive search firm and an interim services consulting firm. So we place people across the country in the C-suite, in mid-level professional, and we place people on interim projects in the area of accounting, IT, and HR. We went from one office in downtown Miami in 1984. We currently have 20 offices around the country. With my staff and consultants, we have close to 500 employees deployed around the country. And so that's a little about, you know, what we do. Would you like me to tell you a little about how we started and what brought that on?
I would, especially around the culture, because as when we've talked in the past, one of the key things that helped you grow so quickly and so strongly was the culture.
Well, you know, it's funny. It really started with what I wanted for myself. I had this vision. I majored in accounting at University of Florida. I used to be smart. I graduated with high grades. And I went to work for one of the big international firms because I thought I wanted to be a partner. And as soon as I got there, I saw the partners never talked to the managers. The managers never talked to the seniors. The seniors never talked to the staff. It was this hierarchical structure. Everybody was walking on eggshells. They couldn't be themselves at work like they were in their personal life. And I remember going to my dad saying, "Dad, I really don't enjoy going to work." And my dad was old school. And he said, "You're not supposed to enjoy work. That's why they call it work." And that wasn't the most encouraging thing I ever heard. So I quit after 4 months, which is sort of hard quitting after 4 months when the first month was training. And I think I quit 5 minutes before they were going to fire me, but I quit. And let's just say I had two more jobs in accounting in the next 8 months and realized maybe accounting wasn't for me. And I went to interview for a recruiting job, and a recruiter offered me a job. I said, "You know, I'd like to deal with people more, but use my accounting background." And he ended up offering me a job to be in recruiting and place accountants. So that was my start. Eventually, I was just a little cocky back then, and I just wanted to have my own firm. So when I started Stephen Douglas, I really had two commitments. I wanted people to feel like they could be themselves at work, like they could be themselves with their family and friends. Obviously act professional, right? But that they could be themselves. And two, that they could make the kind of money they wanted to make, and it wasn't capped on 2% and 3% increases every year. So that was the start. You know, I one time heard a quote. I've heard two quotes that are really useful defining love. And, you know, love is letting someone be exactly the way they are and exactly the way they're not. And I feel my job as a leader is to create a safe environment where people can express themselves, can be themselves, that they don't have to pretend. And you could have straight and open, honest communication in the office. And I think that's one of the keys to our success. You know, I've had people who've been with me for 27 years, 20 years, 25 years. I think the average tenure of people at my firm is 12 years, which is extraordinary considering the average in my industry is probably 2 or 3. So that was a big deal for me, right? To have people feel like they can be themselves. The other definition of love that I think is really useful as a leader. So, you know, there are many definitions of love, right? You got romantic love, you got love for your child, you got love for your God. But I actually went on Webster's Dictionary. And there's another definition of love that says the unselfish, loyal, and benevolent concern for the good of another. Then they define benevolent, kind and generous, organized to do good things for other people. Okay? That's been the foundation for me, how I treat my staff, but also how I treat my clients. You know, fees are very big in my field. You can make a lot of money placing the person, but sometimes it's just not the right fit. And can you have your attention on the concern for your client and the candidate rather than your attention on yourself to actually just make money? So as a leader, and all the leaders in my firm really promote that value, are you doing the right thing for your clients and for your candidates? So you got that piece, and being able to feel like people can be themselves, it's pretty enjoyable going to work in the morning.
So when you find yourself in a position where it isn't the right fit, when placing someone isn't the right fit, but there could be a high dollar return if you just went ahead and shoehorned them in, how do you bring yourself to make the decision to walk away from a potentially big deal, knowing that you're walking away from money on the table if you just made it work? You're honoring the authenticity of the person. How do you make that choice?
Well, you actually listen to what's best for the client and the candidate. They'll tell you. For instance, if a candidate says, "You know what, this culture just doesn't seem right for me, or I just did not connect with the person I'll be reporting to, or the job is just not going to give me the growth that I'm looking for," it's fine. Okay, we're not going to do it. Then I'll ask the candidate, "So tell me again what's important to you." And then eventually I could find something that's right for the client, for the candidate. Or the client will say, "You know what, I just don't think he's going to fit in culturally with my group. Now, that's a hard one to ascertain. But on some points on that, I'll actually do deep references to see what it is like, what that person is like working in teams. But sometimes you just honor the client. So it's very easy. It's not a struggle. It's not complex. If you do what's in the best interest of a client, listen, a client and a candidate, we all know when someone's trying to manipulate us or try to sell us something, right? You can just smell it. And they really appreciate when you're not doing that. So I've had clients for 35 years since 1984, 37 years, I have the same clients because they know I'm looking out for them. So it goes a long way. And if you treat the candidate right, they're going to refer their friends to you. So it's not really a strong conflict. It's not.
So that care and that compassion pays off more in the long run than that short-term shoehorning somebody in for the sale.
Yeah, and that's part of our screening process when we look to hire people internally. If we smell that someone is just committed to making money at any cost, we won't hire them. We will not hire them. They will not make it here past a couple weeks. As soon as we smell that, or they're not coachable to let go, to do the right thing for the client and the candidate, they won't make it at Stephen Douglas. My team would actually make me fire them. I wouldn't even have to do anything.
So does that go toward how you've built this culture that is actually attracting people in a time when others are having a challenge finding individuals to work for them?
Are you talking about working for me, for Stephen Douglas?
For Stephen Douglas.
Well, you know, we did something interesting recently during COVID, but also it was in 08, 09, and it gets back to being more of a heart-based leader, right? And looking out for your employees. So in 08, 09, when it was really tough, right? The last great financial crisis, I made a commitment to my staff that no one was going to get fired and no one was going to get let up, furloughed or their salary cut or anything. And we didn't fire anybody. We fired one or two people that we were going to fire anyway, but we didn't fire anybody through that. And then during COVID, you know, I feel like my part as a leader and the owner of the firm is to keep everything stable. And I've been prepared for this. We knew there was going to be a downturn. I didn't know it was going to be as extreme as we hit the wall, you know, in March during COVID. So I was prepared for it. And in March, I went to all my staff and I said, no one's getting fired. No one's getting cut. No one's getting their salary cut. So none of that happened. Now, my competitors were very much interested in the bottom line. So I have competitors that are owned by publicly traded companies. I got competitors that are owned by private equity firms that, you know, eventually want to grow it and sell it. And they were cutting people's salary. They were furloughing them. They're actually just putting them on hold. And they were actually closing offices with really great people. And looking long term, I told my staff, there's going to be good recruiters, good talent on the market for whatever reason. Either their firm has become toxic, or most firms don't know how to manage through a recession. They just they stop communicating, they cut salaries, they cut expenses. We had daily emails to our staff during the tough times of COVID, encouraging everybody, letting them know the firm was fine, letting them know nobody was losing their job. And daily we did that. So getting back to my original point, I told my staff, there's going to be talent available. So in June, COVID started really, we felt it in March. I mean, we were down 80% in March. But in June, I said, there's going to be good talent on. We've got to keep our eyes open. And since June of 2020, we've hired 50 new employees at Stephen Douglas from competitors. And they get here and they go, it's like a breath of fresh air. I mean, one, you're transparent. We have weekly meetings where we tell everybody how the firm's doing, what our results are. I didn't realize that, but they didn't do that at my competitors. We don't have useless meetings where we manage their activity. and count their phone calls like they do with their car competitors. We just manage them based on the results. And we've created a collaborative environment where people literally get referred business from other divisions in our firm. And we've created a great incentive plan. So my recruiters actually get business being part of Stephen Douglas. And they work in a supportive environment. So they make the kind of money they want to make, and they look forward to coming to work.
And part of what attracted them there is some of your core principles: transparency, communication, compassion, commitment to them being empowered. And this is all part of being a heart leader.
Well, and also being supportive and encouraging, right, of them. Yeah. I never thought of it as a heart leader. I thought it was just being a good leader, you know, Amber?
Yeah. But as you pointed out, others in the field are not doing the same thing. And the point of being a heart leader is combining that heart-centered nature with thought leadership and intellect. So are there other ways that you've observed that you've incorporated that in your business that have led to this massive success that you've had in your industry?
I've always been committed to ongoing growth and development, right? Continuing education. And there's a great program for entrepreneurs led by Dan Sullivan called the Strategic Coach. And I've been taking the program for 15 years. We meet once a quarter with different entrepreneurs. And the purpose is really to grow your business while you're also being nurtured by your job, that you have plenty of free time, and that you're fulfilled and satisfied at work. And one of the things they talked about is don't work on your weaknesses, which was really counterintuitive, right? Everything I thought in sports and school, work on your weaknesses. But they would say you have no commitment to your weaknesses. Rather, I'd like you to find the parts of the job that you love, that when you're doing it, time flies. And I want you to spend more and more time doing that. And we could either build a team around you to do the stuff that you're either not good at or you don't want to do, or we could even outsource it. So I'll give you a perfect example. A lot of firms take great producers and promote them to manager. And a lot of my producers don't want to be managers. They have no interest in it. They may think they should, but it's like asking them, well, what do you really want to do? And some of these, my producers, love producing. They love dealing with clients. They have no interest in managing employees. That sounds like the biggest nightmare or headache. And it's like, okay, we're not going to turn you into a manager. You know, we're going to let you. So I've had people with me for 25 years. I'm happy with them. They're happy, right? And let them focus on their genius. And then people who want to be managers that are actually good managers or leaders, we promote it. So every one of my leaders are just amazing. Some of them have sports training, which I think is very useful for business, where you're really coaching people all the time. So I would say they're more leaders and coached in the coaching arena. But having people, finding out what inspires people and what they're energized by, and let them do more and more of that. You know, I'll give you another example. In the old days, a lot of my recruiters would schedule interviews between the candidate and the client. Well, that's just time consuming and it doesn't really energize them. It's a necessary evil. So we had their people on their team that actually do that, to schedule the interviews, to take that energy sucking work away from them so they could focus on what they love to do, which is advise the clients and the candidates and put good deals together. So that's one of the tools that has really helped us, and it's helped my managers, because a lot of times my managers would look at what was wrong with their employees, what they didn't do right, rather than focusing on what they did really well and building a team around them that will compensate for their weaknesses. So that's been a big shift, right? And when you look at it, I would guess that's a definition of love, right? Focusing on what they bring to the party as opposed to what they don't.
100%, and appreciating them for that.
And appreciation. You know, you talk about gratitude, but I think in action on the ground, it shows up a lot as appreciating people for what they are. which could be a form of gratitude, but also supporting them and encouraging them and complimenting them, right? That's how I think what makes a real difference when you're leading people. The second tool I use is also something that Dan focused on. He talked about how, especially in the sales arena, they're always looking at what's more to do, right? They close a deal and they're just looking, okay, where's the next deal coming from? Or my pipeline's not good enough, or there's always something to fix or wrong. It's never ending. And Dan said, it's fine to live that way, but what'll happen is you'll just be in a condition of being upset most of the time because it's never enough. So he has us start every meeting. We start every meeting at our firm first going over what's positive that happened from the prior week. And it's funny, most people have to actually stop and think about that, right? Because they're always looking ahead, what more there is to do. But what's positive that we accomplished, what are we proud of? And I have my staff do either personal or professional. So you're in a condition of confidence. And then this question after that is, okay, now what will be further progress this week? So it's coming, though, from a condition of, wow, we accomplished stuff, and now what would be further progress? And I think that gets back to also what a leader's main job is to instill confidence in his team, his or her team. And so if you think that's the role of a leader, instill confidence, as opposed to manage, control, yell, berate. You know, there are certain models that do that, right? But how do you instill confidence? And it depends. It's different for different people. So a good leader really has to pay attention to what's going on.
And that's actually a life skill as well. As you said, it can go within the office or out of the office because it's reprogramming our natural tendency to a negative brain bias. Always looking at the negative. When you show them within the office to look at the positive, what's going well, and let's build upon that, then it's showing them the pattern of how they can start to look at the positive and reprogram that negative brain bias. So it's an amazing tool.
It's just amazing how much we're thrown to what more is there to do, you know, what we got to fix. And we'll get to all that. That's in the arena of further progress. Could we sort of celebrate and acknowledge what's actually working and what we're happy about? And it's great to do with your kids, right? As an exercise.
Yeah. So how do you carry that into your personal life or into the community? Because it's apparent that you're doing amazing things within Stephen Douglas, and you have wonderful tools in your back pocket that are leading to this tremendous success. But you're also prevalent within your community, and you have a wonderful relationship with your children, and that is in motion. So how do you balance all of that and show appreciation and continue to give back to the community the way that you do? As we mentioned, you sit on boards and you have a fund that you're consistently giving back through. How do you apply some of these same principles or even different ones throughout that?
Well, you know, it's easy with the boards, right? The boards that I sit on, you can apply the same principles of running an organization where people are satisfied and energized and fulfilled at work. That's easy as a board member, right? You could just apply those same principles. You know, with my kids, you know, I have two daughters, right? And so let's say the challenges of the teenage years. I finally had to realize that I was more interested in creating a safe environment for my children to communicate with me and express themselves. That was more important than being right about how I thought they should behave. And so I would always err on, am I creating a safe environment that my children could be themselves? As in, they could be open and honest and they trusted that they could come to us. So, you know, seems to have paid off. They're doing pretty good. But that was a big dilemma, right? As opposed to how they should behave and what they should do versus, can I create it safe where they could at least come to me? So And that's also with my employees. You know, I'll be pretty irreverent and joke around a lot with my staff, including saying some not exactly clean words in the office, but mostly to create an environment to let people's guards down, right, and disarm them where they can be themselves. You know, if the CEO can be real with you, you should be able to be real with me. You know, I don't want them being afraid of me. I didn't want my children being afraid of me. I wanted them to feel like they could be themselves. You know, and the thing about the community, it was just brought into me very early age. You know, my father was one of those guys who would stop on the side of the road if people were broken down. Now, remember, this is before cell phones. You're broken down on the side of the road, it's a problem.
You're stuck.
Right? It's a problem. I mean, my dad was the most generous guy, and that was instilled in me. And I just feel very grateful for what I have. And especially nowadays, you know, we're doing a lot of work with the Broward Partnership for the Homeless, which is an amazing organization. But for $5,000, you could take a family out of a shelter and get them into an apartment. So we've been doing a lot of that work. There are more Holocaust victims in Broward County than anywhere in the country. And there are some 90-year-olds that are potentially going to be evicted from their apartment who survived the Holocaust. So we've contributed a lot to that fund to keep them in their apartment. You know, I'm on the board of Jason Taylor Foundation. He does amazing work with at-risk youth. And we fund a reading room. We fund poetry slam. We fund college scholarships. And so every month we're looking at what charities need it the most. And, you know, we give away all our money every year. So I contribute money every year, and it's not like we're building up this fund for down the road. Our commitment is every year we give away all the money, and then we replenish it again the next year.
And your daughter is the one who sits and executes this fund?
She'll be the one that does the research on charities that want to would like us to donate some money. So she'll do the research, and then, you know, we'll sit down and discuss where we want to put our money. So it's important. She's got two young children, but it's a great way for her to contribute also to the community.
So that's keeping that heart leadership within the family.
Yeah.
Same impact your father had on you, you're having on your family.
Yeah, my other daughter is a counselor for at-risk teenage girls. So she's she works with teenagers that are getting in trouble and keep them in school and keep them on a path to, you know, do the right thing. So I feel very grateful for the hearts that my daughter has.
Okay. And as you stated, appreciation is gratitude in motion. So what are some of those tools or ways that you show this appreciation, or things that you could share that when you're so busy, because you just stated all these things that you have in motion, how do you show this appreciation through all these layers of your life?
Well, for instance, with my staff, so I've got staff all around the country, and you know, I'm aware of all the deals they do or accomplishments they have. I try to call two or three of my staff every day around the country. And first I'll, you know, one, just compliment them on a great job, right? Ask them if they need anything. And, you know, just me connecting, you know, they all have team leaders, and the team leaders report to a president that report to me. But since I've given up mostly client responsibilities, most of my job is actually, I think, coaching, mentoring my staff. So, and they really appreciate the CEO, right, calling them up. But, and I love doing it. I mean, I'm as nurtured as they are doing it. On my community stuff, it's really just every month giving money away. You know, I feel like my business is pretty busy and my life's pretty busy, that to sit on boards and really give it the attention, my business takes a lot of my time. So my contribution these days is more just giving money away and also raising money for these organizations. So that's in that realm. And I feel very blessed to have friends that I've had since high school that live down here. And I'm just very grateful for the friends and people I have in my life, including you.
Well, thank you. I feel equally as blessed and appreciate every ounce of you.
Thank you.
I know part of your commitment to yourself, because in this flow and in supporting being a heart leader and giving so much of yourself, there's also a need to give back to self, right? Self-love, self-care, and self-appreciation. Because if we don't have that, if we're not replenished, then it's really challenging to show up authentically and have the energy to consistently support all of the things that you stated you do. So are there any tools or techniques that you would share that you do that help you stay in that authentic space, in that space of self-love or self-care, that allow you to show up in this way all of the time?
Well, you know, I've learned as I've aged, right, with some wisdom and reflection. You know, I remember reading the definition of an introvert and an extrovert. And they said an extrovert is actually nurtured by being around people. And an introvert is actually nourished and replenished by having quiet time. And I'm actually much more of an introvert that way. And I didn't know it, or I was just so driven when I was younger. I mean, when I was younger, I would have breakfast, lunches, and dinners every day with clients and candidates, Friday, play golf with clients, Saturday night, go out to dinner with clients and their wives. And I'm finding at this stage of my life, I can't do it, you know, from a well-being standpoint, and two, I don't want to do it. So luckily I have staff that do all that stuff now that I used to do. But it's coming to a realization, like, how do I replenish myself? And for me, going out to dinners on Friday and Saturday nights where I'm drinking and overeating, and I realize it doesn't really work as much for me. So I manage that a little bit. I don't commit to every Saturday night to go out to dinner with even friends, because I actually like having unscheduled time on the weekends. So looking at my schedule and making sure I'm not overbooked right now is really important. Every morning I meditate for 45 minutes, so I have quiet time. I'll journal, and then I have coaches that I could talk to just make sure I get grounded. Because if I'm upset or sideways or feel off, as the leader of my firm, they look to me for stability. And I have to be there for my staff. So I make sure if I feel off or I'm upset about something, that I'm able to get clear on that and actually get perspective on it and let it go quickly, because I can't afford to disappear and be off for too long. So I think that answered it.
Yeah, 100%.
Exercise, by the way, plays a big part. I've been a little lazy the last couple of weeks. I had my birthday weekend and some weddings. But, you know, exercising, I don't really drink that much, but managing the alcohol intake, I do like an occasional cigar. But I would say the biggest thing is knowing that I really like quiet time alone by myself, streaming, watching TV, reading, exercising.
And just honoring that, right?
And honoring that, not thinking I have to be Superman.
I love that advice.
Yeah.
And that's what fits for you, and you honor that. And so knowing what fits for you is also a key part, right?
Yeah.
So vulnerability is another part we talk about in being a heart leader, the willingness to be vulnerable. You talked about this a little bit with your staff and with your friends and with your family. What do you feel? Or what role do you feel vulnerability plays for you as an authentic heart leader when you show up as your authentic self each and every place you go?
Well, I think I don't use the word vulnerability. I use the word as being like open and honest, right? Or real. And so open and honest and real, you know, if something's bothering me, I'll let my staff know and I'll let my friends know. You know, I'm not going to pretend everything's fine. So I, you know, it's like intimacy. You know, it's funny. I heard one time, intimacy, into me you see, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're really open and honest about where you are, people could actually see the real you. And I think the more you can trust that in yourself, that you don't have to be a certain way just to get people's approval or having them like you, but you could be yourself, you'll attract people that want to be with you for who you really are. And that's how I use the definition of vulnerability. Do you have a different one?
No, not at all. Ultimately, it's about being transparent, as you said, in a way that allows people to see into you and who your authentic self is. So each time they see you, it's the same you, and you're not hiding parts of you. So how do you feel that that's contributed to your success?
Well, think about it. If let's say my staff or clients or that I deal with see me, there's a certain amount of trust that's gets built in the relationship, right? And they're also, you're giving them permission to be themselves. So I think it comes down to you create a lot of trust when you're actually being real with your staff and with your clients. And when you think about it, the foundation of all great relationships is that there's trust in the background, right? So for my staff, it's just an obvious one. If I can be real with them, then they can be real with me. That means they could be themselves coming to work in the day. That means that they could be energized by their job and not like drained at the end of the day. I hope. I don't know if they're directly correlated, but the proof is people don't really leave our firm, right? The success is they want to be around that. They want to be around people that are open and trustworthy and honest and real. And so they can be that way. But you don't see it as much. I'm not saying it's not there, but I go into a lot of organizations and it doesn't look like people are really expressed and full of enthusiasm and aliveness for their job.
Yeah.
Because they're usually calling me wanting out.
And then you win.
Yeah.
So if you had just one piece of advice that you could be remembered for all of eternity, what piece of advice would that be?
Oh, really? One piece of advice.
One piece of advice.
Look after the other person. You know, do what's in the best interest for the other person, whether it's your employees, your staff, your clients, your vendors. Try to have it be a win for them and a win for you. So that's really what I look for. I think that's a great advice. I think the other piece, to add another one, you know, if you're related to somebody, whatever that means, if you get related to somebody, their concerns are your concerns. Their interests are your interests. Your interests are their interests. You can create a lot together as a partnership, right? But I think the foundation is being related to somebody. And out of that, productivity gets enhanced, accomplishments gets enhanced, but creating a background of being related with somebody.
That's wonderful.
I gave you two, not one.
That's okay. You don't have to stick to the rules. I have a feeling that's part of what contributes to your success too.
Yeah, I'm not really good at rules. Thanks God I have leaders that actually know how to set policies up and have people follow policies, because I usually am blowing them up. And I've learned if you want to build an organization, you can't always blow up all the policies. You actually need policies. So I'll blow up non-productive policies that we had in the past that don't work anymore. But I was never really good at policies. Leave me alone. Don't bother me. Let me be free.
Are there any other nuggets of wisdom as we prepare to wrap up here that you feel as a heart leader? And you are one of our inaugural heart leaders, by the way. You believed in this program when Suivera first started. And Stephen Douglas and you contributed to assist us in getting off the ground. So when we talk about appreciation and gratitude, we here at Suivera could not be more grateful for your initial belief in what we were pulling together. So I do desire to express that. And these podcasts, many of them are made possible thanks to your kind contribution. So thank you, thank you, thank you for seeing the vision and assisting us in bringing this to life.
Well, you're welcome. You know, the work you're doing is important right now. And it's getting out there. You know, you've shared actually some books from other leaders that are really bringing these concepts into their organization. And it's inspiring. And it's needed. It's needed right now. And if leaders get this, their turnover will be dramatically decreased, right? It's very expensive when employees leave you. It's very expensive when you irritate a client because you're not looking out for their best interest and you lose a client. The cost of getting a new client is a lot more than keeping an existing client. And it all drops to the bottom line. I don't focus as much on the bottom line. I just focus on doing the right things as a leader. And I find that the bottom line sort of takes care of itself.
And do you find that that's the same in your personal life? When you focus on doing the right thing and connecting with the people in your personal life, everything else just kind of works itself out.
Well, I wish I would do that in my golf game, because I don't always do that in my golf game. I'm always focusing on the end result and not paying attention on the process. But it does seem to work in your friendships, right? Looking out for your friends, being trustworthy with your friends, right? Being open and real with your friends. You create these great intimate relationships.
Yes. And you also find out who your friends are, right?
And who they're not, right? And who they're not, who are not your friends.
Yes. And that's all good at the end of the day.
Yeah. Not everyone needs to be a friend. My line these days is I have enough friends. That is my line, but it borders on being cranky, so I got to make sure I don't operate that way all the time. But I've got enough friends. I don't need any more friends. But I do have a lot of friends, and I could always use some more friends.
Yes. My final question for you. How are you navigating through reprogramming your negative brain bias? Because as we stated, everyone can fall into that category where negative thoughts start creeping in. And next thing we know, we might be thinking about, oh my goodness, this is not going right, or this isn't going right, because we just get so busy that the doing takes over.
Well, you know, I can be hard on myself, right, and critical of myself. And one of the things I've been doing is journaling a little every morning, even for 5 minutes. And it's like, what was I really happy about from the prior day? What did I accomplish? What really worked? What are my strengths? You know, I could look at my weaknesses and be hard on myself. Or if I do something, I should have done it better. And so journaling has really helped. Also being around people that actually enhance my confidence as opposed to drain my confidence. You know, I've been very cognizant about that. It's like, I want to be around people now that actually support my confidence. That's a big deal, right? As opposed to people who either tease or critical or deep down, I know, don't support my accomplishments or are not happy for me. So I think that's important also. Who are the people you're associating right now? And don't tolerate people that are not kind to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for being willing to gift us your time. It is a gift, and we do know that. If somebody would like to get a hold of you in order to learn more about Stephen Douglas, now that they know it is such a wonderful place to work and all that you have to offer, how can they do that?
Well, if you go to my website, stephendouglas.com, S-T-E-V-E-N-D-O-U-G-L-A-S, you could directly email me, call me. You could actually see the team I've got, the services we provide, and they could email me and reach out to me.
Perfect. And is reaching out to you the best way, or is there a member on your team that they should look at, or a general message box?
It depends on what they need. If they want to further discuss this, they could feel free to call me. If they have a specific hiring need, there might be people more appropriate at my firm that they could see on the website. But the truth is, they could call me too, and I'll be glad to direct them.
Fantastic. I would also like to take a moment just talking to the wonderful individuals out there who are listening to this podcast to thank the Transformation Network. They are instrumental in everything that occurs behind the scenes to make this podcast possible. So much love goes out to that entire team. You can tune in to us every week and listen as we launch our Heart Leader podcast. And until next time, I am Amber with Suivera, and we look forward to seeing you in our Suivera community.
You've been listening to the Heart Leader podcast with your host, Amber, where heart and mind align. Tune in weekly on TransformationTalkRadio.com as we take a deeper dive into what it means to be a heart leader. Ready to take the next step? Join us and over 1 million people worldwide who've united in creating this global movement of love. Become a heart leader for today and tomorrow. Learn more and connect with us at suivera.org.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.